welcome to the Diet Detox Podcast. I'm your host, Margaret Berry, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, master TTAP trainer, and mother of two. I'm joined by my co-host, Victoria Wilkes, a fellow intuitive eater, passionate TTAPper, and mother of two. Each week, we want to empower you with new information about the way our bodies and minds work together to bring us into balance when we are well-nourished and well-fed. Victoria and I are not only good friends, but we are also lucky enough to be sisters-in-law. So join us as we discuss topics such as body image, intuitive eating, women's health, pregnancy and postpartum nutrition, the science behind nutrition and exercise, and so much more. Remember our disclaimer, the materials and content within this podcast are intended as general information only and are not to be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Now let's get to the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Diet Detox Podcast. I'm your host, Margaret Berry, here with my sister-in-law, Victoria Wilkes. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just knitting away and my knitting needles are very clicky tonight. So it is me knitting a cowl for my daughter. So.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's like awesome.
Like a little infinity scarf almost, like just a little kind of a tube of knitting that you pull out of your neck.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, because it's getting to be fall. It was like 60, 50 something today. And I feel like that when I think that that is cool in temperature, I'm going to be really in trouble in wintertime. I always am like, I'm going to be in big trouble when it's, you know, 19 degrees or 12 degrees. So makes me shiver just thinking about it.
it's good for my knitting mojo. Like I suddenly want to knit everything whenever it turns cold. So
it kickstarts my
knitting.
It's that time of year as well. Yeah. It kind of goes with the territory of the pumpkin spice latte type of things, you know.
Exactly.
So let's do our normal segment where we chat about something we've been enjoying recently. Food wise. So what about you? I didn't even think of one before. So I'm going to think of one while you're saying yours. So what have you been, liking?
Lately, I've been just loving the chocolate cereal from the company called Love Grown. I've been loving it. I normally never cared for chocolate cereal growing up. It seemed like a waste because I love chocolate, but I feel like the chocolate would always seep into the milk. This kind of be like a waste. It never tasted chocolatey to me, but so I never really ate chocolate cereal, but I had some at the beach or something that your mom had one time. And I just got hooked because I really like Love Grown. They're a rice and bean flour based cereal. So it's kind of a protein boost.
Yeah. It's more protein than like rice alone. Yeah.
Exactly. So instead of just like rice Chex, I can do oats just fine, but for whatever reason, corn makes me have a hard time breathing. So it's not worth it for me to eat it. So I can't do like most cereals have corn in it. So I can do Love Grown because it's just rice flour and bean flour. And the chocolate kind is so delicious.
That sounds good.
So good. And it's on Vitacost. I think like $5 for a box of cereal, which is not outrageous. It's still expensive, but it's not outrageous for gluten-free cereal. So I've been loving it. And my three-year-old really likes it. I'll put some in her snack cup. And I tried to like not introduce my baby, the 11-month-old, to chocolate stuff right now. I don't really even know why. I'm not anti-sugar, but more of just like the principle of the thing. Like you shouldn't give a baby chocolate. I don't know. But he found my daughter's snack cup and was eating it, and it made him so happy. So I let him eat it at the park today when we got together. I was just like, whatever, Jack, have fun and just eat it.
So cute. Yeah, I love that cereal. I need to get some more of it. My daughter really likes it too. It's nice, like, you know, one of those things to pull out for like, oh, we're on the road and we need a snack.
Exactly.
We're at the park and we need something that is not blueberries that's going to stain everything.
Yes. And they've got the unsweetened kind, which just plain little, you know, almost like Cheerios, like plain Cheerios. And those are delicious with like freeze dried strawberries or sliced bananas. If you eat that, oh, it's so good. And I usually give my baby that one. And they also have like fruity kind called Sea Stars. That's really yummy. But I'm loving the chocolate cereal.
Nice.
So. What about you? What have you been enjoying?
So I've been making a lot of gummies again recently. It just like, you know, little fruit gummy snack things. But I made some the other day that were adrenal, like the adrenal cocktail made into a gummy, and that was cool. Ooh. And, but I think that the key to the gummies, cause I've always really just made them in a square pan and cut them up, but I'm beginning to learn that the key to getting your kids to be really excited about them is to buy one of those dumb little molds that turns them into gummy bears. And then all of a sudden, it's the hot commodity in the house because, you know, and it's just, and I mean, they have them on Amazon for $8 and they come with a little dropper. I showed it to my husband. I was like, look, I'm so excited. I'm going to get this for the kids to, you know, make gummy bears because we have other shapes, but I was like, let's just do bears. And he was like, that looks like a lot of trouble. I was like, there's a lot of things that I do that are a lot of trouble, but they're for the good of my, you know, kids or whatever. It's just funny. funny. So
That's fun. I forgot about making gummies. I cleaned out one of my dreaded closets the other day that was just a catch-all closet.
Yeah.
I found my gummy molds and my daughter asked me to make some. So I feel like it's, you know, it's a sign. I need to just make some again. I forgot all about making gummies.
They're so good.
Yeah.
Love them. Okay. So let's go ahead and get in today's podcast, which we're going to be talking about metabolism, how to have a healthy metabolism, some signs of an unhealthy metabolism or under eating, which we've talked about a lot before, and then also some tips like what you can do about having a quote unquote slow metabolism, and also some just signs that you can tell that will show you that you are in a healthy metabolism pattern so that you can just have that knowledge for yourself. So first of all, the metabolism refers to the rate at which your body burns energy for fuel, basically, is essentially what it is. So it's your metabolic rate, the rate at which you use energy in your body. And it used to be thought that, you know, oh, well, some people just have higher metabolisms and some people have lower metabolisms. And that's actually not really true because a lot of the input and the output has to do with how your metabolism functions and what it adapts to, because it really does. It adapts to whatever you're doing to it. So for example, if you decide to eat, you know, 800 calories a day because, you know, Kim Kardashian's doing it or whatever, your body will adapt to it. And all of a sudden, if you go above that, your body will also have to start to adapt to that. So you kind of move, it's moving the goalposts for your body, essentially. Your body can adapt to eating 800 calories, but like I always like to ask, should it? Should you have to make it, like we were talking about on the low carb episode and stuff, you know, should you have to ask your body to do that, or can you just give it the materials, you know, like why do we have to make it more complicated? So it's a similar thing with calories. You know, you have to make sure that your body's processes need to do what they're going to do. So for example, if you're, you know, if it's going to adapt to what you're doing and you give it 800 calories, well, it will probably pull some vital processes that happen in your body, such as fertility. Fertility is the first thing to go generally in the function and the flow of your body, because if you can't keep yourself alive, how do you think you're going to keep another person alive if you get pregnant? So it shuts that down because, of course, we don't want, you know, they don't, you know, your body intuitively does is like, we can't produce for this child. So let's pull the fertility. So that's usually one of the first thing it goes. So you're having really irregular periods or no periods at all or no ovulation, because ovulation is pretty important for all of your hormonal health, including progesterone and all that as well. But I'm not going to go into all of that. But I will say that that's usually one of the first things to go with metabolism, because your body, you know, needs to know that it's safe, especially female bodies, as we've said as well. So I wanted to talk about two signs that you can use that will help you know how your metabolism is. And again, these are not foolproof. These are not like absolute bulletproof, failproof, but they are tools to use so that you can kind of see how you're doing. And interestingly, they also relate to your thyroid, which is kind of cool.
Everything so. Relates to the thyroid.
Doesn't everything relate to the thyroid? It's like when in doubt, thyroid. You know, is your did your dog chew up your picnic table? Well, is your thyroid? No, you know, it's literally. I feel like thyroid can be so much, so much to blame. Anyway, okay, so the first thing that you can look at that's a nice objective measure is your pulse. So a resting pulse. So meaning like when you're resting, like, you know, you haven't been running around, obviously. Right. Resting pulse rate between 75 and 90 beats per minute suggests healthy metabolic activity. Now, some of you guys are going to go, wait, I thought that the lower that your pulse is, like, the more athletic you are. Well, it actually has a very direct corollary to thyroid depression, like depressing of your thyroid. So, you know, for these athletes, hard charging athletes, yes, they probably do have a lower rate because their heart is working less hard. But the signals of hormones in your body, it's all controlled by the thyroid. So if it's having trouble performing those, it's going to kind of conserve its energy and not want to do that. So basically it tells you that your tissues and organs are getting what they need to help them function. So, you know, you can use just, you know, how they do it the old fashioned way. You put your fingers at your wrist, take your pulse, or do an oximeter. That can work too, just to see how it is, you know, how's your pulse going. And then the next thing that you can test is your temperature. And depending on where you are in your cycle, for women, but if you have, so a temperature at 97.7 in the morning, so that, like, you know, after you get up, and then between, you know, 98.6, which is kind of with a classic, that's the average, or the human temperature or whatever, that means that you have a high functioning metabolism and your thyroid is working well. So when glucose is being metabolized, energy and heat is produced. So you're going to be warm. That's why one of the symptoms of hypothyroid is you're cold. You don't have much energy. You typically have issues with just how your metabolic processes are working at that point as well. But that's interesting because one of the things that you'll know is that you're warm. You're nice and warm. You're not having any excess, like, oh my gosh, I'm cold all the time. That's one of my first, oh my goodness, that was one of the things that I really had when I was really underweight, was that I was just really cold all the time. And part of it was because I didn't have much body fat, but also part of it was that my thyroid was very unhappy. So now for women, of course, depending on where you are in your cycle, women's temperatures will be, and some of you may know this, some of you may not, but usually women's temperature cycle on their cycle, so the first 14 days until, or 13 days until ovulation, it will be lower and then it will jump. You will have up to half a degree or more that you will jump after ovulation. And that you know, around ovulation, you will have that temperature will go up. So for women, it's important to know that you typically will have a variance there. And after you eat, if you've eaten something and you take your temperature later on, you may find it has gone up. And that's because you're increasing your warmth, your burn rate of your body.
That is actually so interesting. Yeah. It's like actual burning. It's like, it makes me think of like a little fire.
It is. Like it's literally like putting some logs on the fire. I kid you not. And I always remember, you know, back when I was little, we used to go to football games and it was really cold. Yeah. You know, in the fall, I would sit there and I'd be like, oh, I'm getting hungry. I'm going to eat a snack. And I would eat a snack. And you know what? I would get warmer. I kid you not. And I always thought I was imagining, but it's actually true. When you eat, you get warmer. It's really how it works because it literally creates
adding fuel.
Heat. Yes. Oh, so anyway, so you can use a thermometer, you know, hold it in place, you know, and take your temperature. Once you can do it when waking and then once mid-afternoon. And then you can also do an armpit reading if you want, but usually oral is the way that everybody recommends doing it, unless you're a baby, which case it's much less, it's much more unpleasant. You can do it, you know, for about a month period of time and see how you're doing, 'cause you're going to have natural variations to that as well. So
was it more of the average, not necessarily just like if you're trending lower? 'Cause I know that all my whole adult life, and I haven't checked my temperature recently. I wonder if it's different, but early adult, late teenage, I was always in the low 97s. It was just interesting because that's whenever I was under eating. So I'd be interested in my temperature. That'd be an interesting experiment to do.
Yep. Yeah, it would. And I used to be stuck, like, you know, 96s. So anybody that's in the 96s, I got you. I've been there before. And I was just playing around with it the other day, and I was in the 98s, which is a big deal because normally I'm not, I would not be there. So that was kind of cool. So anyway, but yeah, that's you're literally stoking a fire. You're stoking the fire of your metabolism. So, yeah. And people get scared of eating too much. Of course, we've talked about that before. People get all weird out about that. But I wanted to, before I talk about that, I wanted to talk about some other signs that you might have, you know, that you have a stable metabolism, meaning that, you know, you've got a good thing going with your metabolism and not any dips or drops in it, is that you sleep good at night. And interestingly, all of these, I was just realizing, I was looking at this list, all of these are things that we've talked about before in the under eating. Most of them are, interestingly. Isn't that cool? But yeah, so you sleep through the night. You have typically good, stable energy. And then, you know, good digestion, like, and that you're having bowel movements. That's people, constipation is a thyroid thing, generally. I have seen it be other things as well. But when you have decreased thyroid hormone and a lower metabolism, it decreases gut motility, meaning that your gut is literally not going to want to move things along. So that can be another thing. And then also you have pretty regular periods and you don't have, you know, like crazy symptomatic, problematic periods. Right. But a lot of us, you know, it's normal. I've actually, in my own experience, just researching, it's normal to have some cramping. Like, hello, your uterus is emptying out. So of course, duh, you're going to have a little bit. And little or no menopausal symptoms. So for women who are in menopause, you know, you're not completely debilitated by hot flashes, say. Your hair feels good. Your nails feel good. Your moods are relatively stable. And I say relatively because we're all females here. We know how it is. So, and generally you just feel good. You typically, you might not be as easily stressed. That's something else that with the metabolism, if your body is happy with where it is and it's not having to constantly be scared that it's not going to get enough to eat at the next meal, you'll typically handle stress better because of that as well. So
it's interesting because I always heard growing up, well, so-and-so has a fast metabolism and, you know, we have, you know, in our family, we have low metabolism, so we need to just work out more and we got to watch what we eat. It was more of like a genetic thing that you can't help, right? That's how I was taught growing up, is more of a genetic thing that you can't help. And so you have to make up for your low metabolism by, you know, eating less and working out more. And I heard a really great description before of metabolism being like a thermostat, where you can, your metabolism is going to either kick on the heat or kick on the AC to keep everything stable. Your body's not that interested in losing or gaining weight in massive amounts like we are. Mostly losing in our culture, but it's interested in keeping things stable. And so it will lower your metabolism if you're not eating enough, or if you're exercising too much. It lowers your burn rate so that you don't die. And so it's kind of like the lady in the analogy was saying that the metabolism is like, you can open a window by dieting, right? But your body, if your body wants to keep it at 72 degrees, if your body's the house and you open up a window because you're like, 72 is just excessive, I need to lower the temperature in this room. It's going to keep fighting and fighting and fighting to keep it at 72. It's going to keep turning up the heat and turning up the heat, or turning down the heat if you're not eating enough, you know, whatever. The analogy breaks down at some point, but it's the basic thing is that you can do stuff to try to change it, but your metabolism is fighting to keep the status quo. And this is reminding me also of how you were talking about blood sugar. I'm wondering how it relates to blood sugar, but it's like you're saying all the extremes your body will go to keep the glucose levels steady. It's like your body really, really, really likes balance.
It does. And unfortunately, the rest of the fitness world, like, and nutrition world really likes flashy, crashy diets. That's just what, you know, it really does. Everybody wants that you know, it's not flashy. It's not flashy to get enough sleep. It's not flashy to reduce your stress. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Oh my goodness. So anyway, that's just, yeah, that's very true with it, with that.
And this is also making me think of, there are times whenever, even with no exercise, pregnancy is the only time that I know of that with even no exercise, your body is hitting, you know, you sitting on the couch and just being in your third trimester, you're going to be at your upper limit for what your body's capable of handling metabolically. And there was a really interesting study that they did comparing pregnant women's metabolism, resting metabolic rate, I believe, or basal metabolic rate. Is that the same thing?
Yes. I think so. Yeah, it's just basically, BMR. Yeah.
Yeah, their BMR. Mm-hmm. And it was the same as ultra athletes. I don't remember what they're called. They're the ones who run a marathon 5 or 6 days a week. They run a marathon every day. They're the crazy, most extreme exercise you can have. And pregnant women's metabolism is right about the same bit. So in that article, and we'll link to it, it was from BBC, I believe, that they were studying these ultra marathon runners, and their metabolic rate would spike crazy high for the first little bit. I don't remember if it was days or weeks, but it would stay crazy high. And it reminds me of diets or like extreme exercise, to where, yes, you can boost your metabolism and burn energy very quickly at first, but then your body adapts. Yep. And then it reduced until it hit the upper threshold that it could handle. And interestingly enough, the pregnant women were one notch below the metabolic rate of ultra marathon runners. Like, your body is kind of maxed out at pregnancy, and it's maxed out.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's just interesting how your body does its absolute best to keep it at a, in balance, even in extreme circumstances, like growing a baby or like running a marathon every day.
It will fight you. It will fight you to keep things normal and baseline, not, you know, too low, not too high. It will just try, like, it's trying to keep it at a good level to keep it alive. And, you know, what I hear a lot as well is that, pretty much everyone wants everyone wants to do the diet to get the fast metabolism. Everyone wants to get the fast metabolism. And oftentimes it is because they want to, quote unquote, lose weight. Like, let's be real. That's, you hear, oh, I want to have a fast metabolism. I want to be like that person that can eat whatever in sight and not gain a single pound. Like, you know, like that type of thing. But, and you know, I was talking to a friend of a friend the other day, and they were talking about how, you know, they've seen people where they'll be, you know, in a larger body, but they feel like they can't eat because all they've been told is that they need to not eat, and that will make them lose weight, and it's not doing anything for them. And that makes me so mad. That makes me so mad. And this person was just talking about a friend of theirs to me. And I was like, that is so sad, because so many people buy into that, and they're making their life miserable and unhealthy because they are having this thing in their mind, eat less, move more equals what everything I've ever wanted. It's like, no, you have to eat in order to build a fast metabolism. Like we've already shared, you have to eat in order to create the heat. And of course, with exercise, for example, this kind of goes along the lines on here of like, what do you do if you think you have a slow metabolism? Exercise is great, because what it can do is, no, it's not about burning off your calories. It's about helping you have muscle mass, because the traditional way that people would say to, quote unquote, lose weight is eat less, exercise more. That's like what everybody says. And by the way, it does not work long-term sustainably, or really at all. Let's just be real.
No,
it's not sustainable, and it will mess up your metabolism. Because you're constantly beating it down. It's like you're trying to put the fire out, you know? How do you think it's going to burn better if you're trying to put it out? Like,
if you're not fueling it, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you're not fueling it. So, you know, if you're exercising, you're going to be putting on some muscle mass, okay? And the muscle mass is just a fact that muscle mass is more metabolically active at rest than adipose tissue. That's just a fact. Like, it is more hungry for glucose and other stuff. It's more hungry for that. So, of course, yeah, if you have more muscle mass, you're going to have a higher metabolism. But guess what? You have to eat in order to build muscle mass. Muscle mass is something that you build that's like your body is trying – like, let's just go into get into the mind of your, you know, the mind of your mind where your body's like, okay, protect the body, make sure we don't die, make sure our glucose stays stable. This is what your brain is thinking. And then if there's stimuli, meaning exercise, guess what's going to happen? Your body is going to want to put on muscle, but it can't put on the muscle if it doesn't have the materials. It cannot put on the muscle if it does not have the materials. It, like, you can trigger the stimulus, you know, you can lift the thing or you can do the workout, but if you don't have the materials there, it's not going to be able to build the muscle, and you will not have more muscle mass, which will automatically kick your metabolic rate up. Like,
I never thought about that, that your body can't create muscle from nothing.
No, it can't. It's got to have the materials, and it's got to have the stimuli, which is the exercise, and then it has to have the materials. And if it's almost like it's like the cherry on top. You know, it's trying to keep you alive. It's trying to keep all your bodily processes going. It's trying to keep you from getting COVID-19 and whatever other thing is going around. You know, it's trying to protect you, right? And then as a bonus, it might consider putting on muscle if you have enough food there. You know, it's right. Just like, you have to. And I get it. I get it. It is very scary to eat more food. It's very, very scary, especially when you have been living on not a lot of food. It's terrifying, I would say, because it's just like, I've not let myself eat this much before, and what's going to happen? And overnight, you know, and I find that once you override the panic of, oh, I'm going to die and blow up and whatever. Once you get past that, you're like, oh, that was actually okay. And nothing changed for the worse. And I feel okay. So, you know, that can be hard. It can be hard to push past that. But that's one of the keys, is that you got to, you know, if you're going to have muscle mass, which will automatically get you higher in your metabolic rate. Yeah. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anybody who wanted a higher metabolism for health purposes, but it's almost always just to lose weight, because, you know, it burns energy, whatever, but it makes total sense that you actually have to have energy to burn to keep the fire alive. That's a great analogy. And I think that it's very true, because whenever you undereat, you and I both experience this, that whenever you undereat, there comes a point where your appetite just goes down. Like, I know an older lady who's a friend of mine said that she doesn't consciously diet at all, but she eats about 900 calories a day. She just doesn't have an appetite. And you can get to that point if you're not eating enough, but if you kind of slowly build it back up for eating a normal amount for your body, then it kind of kicks your metabolism back into gear, and then you're hungry again, and then your appetite is back on track.
Yes.
And again, like we've said so many times, there are some really good videos on this on YouTube from Damn the Diets.
Yes.
He's got some great stuff about how your metabolism will adapt to what you're doing. If you're under feeding it, it'll drop. If you eat, and that's kind of it, the metabolism ties into the set point theory that we did an episode on a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Because it's like, if one day you're, I don't know, you're out with friends and you're at a restaurant and you eat more calories than your body actually needs, your metabolism will burn a little faster to take care of that extra. So that's why whenever you're eating intuitively, you don't fluctuate massively and weight all the time. It's not like, oh my goodness, I ate an extra 200 calories today that I didn't need, and now I've gained 5 pounds. It's like, no, your body, your metabolism revs up or slows down a little bit to take care of the normal fluctuations of a normal appetite.
If that makes sense. Yep, exactly. It will adapt to you, you know? So, you know, in general, you know, if you eat food, like we're saying, your metabolism will start to increase. And especially if, and I will say this too, let's say you're someone who has been really, you know, under eating a lot. I find that for these people, when it's really scary to be eating, sometimes adding in some movement can help, because oftentimes you don't have a big appetite. If you have not been eating, you don't have a big appetite. Exercising will help you have a bigger appetite. And it will also have the side benefit of helping you get some more muscle mass, if that makes sense. So it's kind of like a nice little, it helps you get a little bit better appetite. You're more hungry, so you eat more, and then you've exercised, so you're building muscle mass. So it kind of like pings all the little, all of the little things. So that's something that, you know, someone could add in, because it might help it be a little less scary. Now, it's still going to be scary to eat, you know, if you're scared of eating, but you also want to repair your, you know, repair your metabolism and stuff like that. So it's still going to be helpful for you. So do you have anything else? I don't think I have anything else.
I don't think so.
Okay, cool.
Shorter, but
yeah, that's all basically what you need to know is everyone's afraid to eat, but in order to build your metabolism, you need to eat. That's like what I have here is like the bottom line. Bottom line is you got to eat to, you know, build your metabolism. Yes. That's how it works. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, y'all. And we will talk to you again next time. Bye. Bye.
Content, check us out on Instagram. We're at instagram.com/dietdetox. We'll see you next time.